It's a Friday, and as we always do, we visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch on Scoops with DannyMac.com. We've been doing this since the inception of the website, and this is brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group. Before you have surgery, before you think about doing that, make sure you contact the doctors, and they're right here in St. Louis, in Chesterfield. Blue Tail Medical Group, see what they offer. Non-surgical procedures, BlueTailMedicalGroup.com, BlueTailMedicalGroup.com. Ben Fredrickson is down in Jupiter, Florida. Always great to visit with you, Ben. How are things going?
Happy Friday, Dan, and I'm doing well. And first of all, happy day after birthday, man.
Oh, you celebrated
a birthday the other day. I saw everybody giving you the warm wishes. I sent you a personalized video.
Oh, that was so sweet of you.
That wasn't a cameo, you know, so you don't owe me anything.
Okay. All right.
But it was just something for your personal collection there. And I wanted to tell you happy birthday and that we appreciate you. And I'm happy to be with you. Happy to have you as a friend. And always enjoy our chats on Friday, my friend.
I do too. I appreciate it very much and all the well wishes for those that listen in on these Fridays or wherever you get your podcast and the various things that we offer. I'm getting to the point, Ben, where I used to listen to old people talk about, you know, I'm not sure about these birthdays. Now I know what they're talking about. I'm not sure you want to celebrate these things. It's a stark reminder that you're going the wrong way.
It's all downhill after 21, man. That's what I was told. And I think I can remember, you know, making fun of my sister for turning 30, and that looks foolish now. So that was years ago. But, yeah, man, they're just a number now, but better than the alternative too.
You got that right. Let's jump into, there's a ton of stuff I want to get with you with the Cardinals, some rapid fire. We'll talk about the NCAA tournament as well. And I guess there's no particular order of importance with these things, but I think they're all very, very interesting as it pertains to the Cardinals. Let's start on the injury front, and it's John Gant trying to make a case to be a starter. We had a game on television this past week. He looked really good as a starter. He was matched up with Max Scherzer. There's also KK, who's trying to find his way back, and Mike Shildt did update the media yesterday. So let's start with those two. Where do you think they stand right now with what's going on in spring training?
Well, Dan, it sure seems like Gant has positioned himself to at least get a start, maybe two, of the regular season through the rotation's first turn. He seems to be kind of in line there as the Cardinals kind of try to figure out what exactly they're going to get back and how quickly for both KK and Miles Michaelis. Now, the good news on KK, he's pitching. He seems to be a little ahead of schedule after that back tightness caused him to have a scratched appearance. I think they're optimistic that he'll be back sooner rather than later. Shildt has not said that he'll be ready for the first turn of the rotation to the season. Sounds like he might be able to, although I wouldn't be shocked if the Cardinals maybe, you know, have him skip it anyway, just to really take precaution and play. We're going to see, you've mentioned it, and it's wise to keep pointing out, we're going to see some hesitancy from the Cardinals with pitchers in a lot of different ways, whether it's the discussion to move Alex Reyes to the bullpen, whether it's pulling starters early through the first couple turns when the games count. I don't think we'll be seeing too many guys go deep into games early in the year across baseball based off of this weird jump from a 60-game season to 162. So I think they're going to operate on the edge of caution there a little bit with KK, which increases their chance for Gant to get a chance to do what he wants to do. He wants to start. He's pitched really well this spring. He does a good job of showing some of the things as a starter that he can't always show as a reliever. He gets more time. There's kind of more air in the room for him to use some of his other pitches. I thought his curveball has looked pretty good this spring. There is a noticeable change when he hits that third time through the order.
Oh, yeah. The numbers bear that out. Yep.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the ERA skyrockets, but you just see it in him. He just looks a little, I don't want to say deflated, but you can tell it wears on him. And we did see that in his last time out, and we saw the Cardinals get him out of there pretty quick on a pitch that he thought it was a strikeout. He wasn't too far off. But, you know, the Cardinals said, okay, we're not going to let you see Juan Soto. You're done. In part, most of it was pitch count. But it would also be realistic, I think, to what you'd see in a game he's starting. And that's kind of the reason I like Gant more in a relief role, because I think he's more reliable. I think he's more valuable. You can pitch him more often. But if you're not with Michaelis and you're not with Kim to start, then I can see how he's very clearly your best option here. Daniel Ponce de Leon wants to be in this mix. Johan Oviedo is going to be in this discussion. It sounds to me like he's going to be starting in the minors, but starting so he can be built up in case there's another hole in the rotation at some point. Woodford is in the conversation, but I think he's going to wind up being a bullpen arm for this team.
So, doing some numbers, nobody completed more than 84 total innings last year. Only 16 pitchers threw more than 70. And on six teams, which included the Dodgers and the Rays, who, obviously went to the World Series, no pitcher even reached the 60 innings mark before the playoffs. And it was the first time in the history of baseball that starters averaged fewer than five innings per outing. So when people say, well, why don't you do this and why don't you do that? I think that's why you have the hesitancy from the Cardinals and maybe others in saying, we're going to be very, very careful on what we do with our pitching. And I can understand that. So that's just some of the background and maybe what they're thinking. Let's go to the bench. And I think it's also what I'm saying dovetails into the bench and how many pitchers you want to carry this year to make sure that you feel protected in games if starters aren't going to go very deep. Is there a competition still happening right now with the bench and who makes this club?
I think there is. I think if you go the chalk, we'll talk chalk brackets, right, for the NCAA tournament. Chalk suggests that Edmundo Sosa gets that spot. Depending on how many infielders the Cardinals take, that it would be Edmundo Sosa and Matt Carpenter, because the Cardinals have made it pretty clear that Matt Carpenter is at least going to start the season on the bench. There was so much hemming and hawing about the Cardinals giving him a lot of Grapefruit League at-bats. Of course they were going to. They wanted to see what he can do. He's had some better results, not in terms of the box score, but he's taken some longer at-bats. He is driving some balls hard. It's just, can he get them past the warning track? Because right now those are long outs. So he hasn't knocked Edmund aside. Edmund's going to be the starter at second base. Edmund is going to be this team's leadoff hitter. Carpenter's going to be looking to get in where he fits in, but he will be on the bench to start the season. Now, if he continues to struggle and can't pinch hit and all those other things, then it's a different conversation the Cardinals could be having. But I think it's pretty much a lock for him. Sosa, he's out of options, which the path of least resistance, which is one the Cardinals often take, would suggest you find a place for him. However, there's a couple guys who would be a little harder to fit in who are playing really, really well. John Nagowski, all he does is hit. He's screaming that he can play some outfield too. We haven't seen him much out there other than shagging fly balls, but he looks like the kind of bat that you'd like to have coming up late in the game off the bench, certainly more than some of the other options. And the other guy is Jose Rondon, who's here on a – now, Nagowski has options – so they can send him out and hold on to him, and that's all good and well. And it probably, it probably hurts him that he has those options, unlike Sosa. Rondon is interesting because he's on a minor league deal. He's not on the 40-man, so you really have to create a place for him. And the Cardinals probably, if they had it their way, would not have that situation. However, all this guy does, Dan, is hit. He hits triples. He's got good power in his bat. He's looked really nice as a potential bench bat. So I think he's going to have to force their hand here as spring goes on, but he's still in the mix right now. There's another one thing we should mention. You mentioned how many pitchers. That's huge. That will probably depend on their health, the health of their arms exiting spring. The other thing here is they still don't know, as of late this week, if Justin Williams is out of options or not. This kid is making loud contacts all camp. He's left-handed. Could they basically have to have a spot for him on the bench if he's out of options? They don't want to risk losing him on waivers if they send him down. So that could shape things a little bit as well. They've got to get an answer on this. He's not the only one in this spot. A bunch of teams across the league don't know if their guys have options left or not for a certain group that Justin Williams is in because of their service time. And they're trying to build their opening day teams. They've got to know this has to be decided any day. Like, it should have been decided a week ago, at least a month ago.
Crazy. Yeah, it should have been a month ago at least. Tommy Edman looks like he solidified himself in the leadoff spot. I think we all agree with that, correct?
Yeah, man. He looks good. I mean, he's hitting a ton of singles. And I know everybody talks about the walks with Edman, but he said something interesting the other night. He said, look, his chase rate on pitches outside of the strike zone went down last year, which that's a really good thing, right? He's forcing pitchers into the strike zone. But the other thing that went down was his swing rate on pitches that were inside the strike zone. And I think he felt like he maybe got a little too passive on strikes last year. So I think he's dialing that back up while trying to keep the chase rate low. He's an aggressive hitter. He's not going up there to look to walk. And if he stays within the zone, the walks, they're going to come. But I think they like him at leadoff because he looks good. He's beating the shift now, which is what he didn't do last year. When he's hitting from the left side and he's not right, he pulls the ball and they can shift on him and it works. He's beating the shift. He's hitting it back up the middle. The other thing too, Dan, he's got real speed and he's a savvy base runner. And I think they like him to kind of set the stage for the rest of the order and maybe steal some bases, eliminate the double play. We've been seeing more and more Schilt kind of using the Goldschmidt Arenado look at 2-3. He said after the other night's game that he likes that look. Now he's not going to commit to it. It could change over the course of the season. We're going to see those guys make flip flop some, and they're going to move 2-3, 3-4. They won't go above or beyond that. But I think he's still working on it a little bit. But he likes that look of Goldschmidt 2, Arenado 3. Get more at bats for them. It raises the question then of who hits cleanup, and who could it be? Tyler O'Neill. He's had a great spring. Paul DeJong. He's had not such a great spring. Who's going to emerge there? Is Dylan Carlson going to be able to get up to the higher parts of the order? I would like to see Edman 1, Carlson 2, if he's locked in, and then you have your Goldschmidt Arenado 3-4 to try to drive in some runs. If O'Neill's bashing, you can put him at 5, maybe even Yadier Molina at 5 because he's such a good hitter with guys on base. He's so situationally sound. But to me, the biggest parts right now is the guy we didn't mention, Paul DeJong. Where is he in this? He's had a slow spring. He's starting to show some signs, maybe getting locked in. And the other guy is Dylan Carlson. He's had a very quiet spring, 1 triple. If those guys can be up in the order, ahead or right behind the Goldschmidt Arenado 1-2, then this lineup looks a lot better. If they're struggling, then the lineup looks like it's got 2 really good hitters in a lineup that doesn't have a lot of direction other than that.
And we started this topic talking about Tommy Edman, who's at second base. Matt Carpenter was hoping to force that issue. Where's Carpenter right now in this camp, Ben, because the numbers just haven't been very great?
No, he's got to find a way off the bench. I mean, he said it. He's got a hit to find playing time now. And, you know, some people will scoff at this. He's had better results than that box score indicates. But at the end of the day, you know, he couldn't put himself in a spot where he's got a couple hits in spring so far and he's starting over Edman at second base. He's going to be on the bench and he's going to have to make his hay and pinch hit opportunities unless something changes. If he goes on a hot streak, if Edman really struggles, if somebody in the outfield really struggles and Edman shifts out there, I mean, they're not going to close the book on Carpenter just yet. But this idea, if there was one, that he was going to create a starting position at camp, I think that window has closed for now.
You asked a very important question when the Cardinals, and you asked this initially when they made the deal, you've asked it in spring training, and that's the shoulder of Nolan Arenado, and so far, so good. Now, you know, we're looking for, I don't look at the power numbers coming out of Florida because you never know if the wind is blowing in, blowing out. It's a tough place right. to hit, but right. the ball jumps off his bat and he says he's 100%, and it looks like he's 100% with that shoulder.
Yeah, he's drilling it. Any questions I had have been answered. I mean, I thought it was a fair question when they brought him in. I mean, the last Cardinals outfielder that arrived via big trade and was supposed to lift the offense, he had a shoulder so bad he couldn't throw. I mean, we remember watching Marcell Ozuna show up to spring training his first year, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, his arm's a little sore. And then it was like, no, it's messed up.
Yeah.
And here's another huge addition, bigger certainly than Ozuna, and he's got a suspect shoulder, had one last season. Arenado's been straight up. He said, look, as far as I know, I'm good to go. I won't know until I play games, but I can tell you it feels good. Well, it looks good, and it feels good now that he's played 10-plus games. He's back to swinging with that high finish that he has, you know, to power up his stuff. He had to kind of alter his swing path last year. And just the candid nature with which he's talking about how different things were last year, to me, is a sign that he does feel better. Sometimes when guys talk about something that's still bothering them, they're defensive about it, or they, you know, they don't want to get into it. He's been pretty much an open book. He even the other day on a Zoom, he was showing us how his swing path was altered versus how it is now. And he just seems to be back in his zone. He's not crushing the ball out of Roger Dean, but I'm telling you, the exit velocities, which they have at Roger Dean, they're very high after they were down for him last year. He's drilling the baseball loud off the bat. He looks really good. And the shoulder never did hurt his defense. That's been that's been stellar all spring. Watching him every day, you realize he makes a play every almost every game that somebody else would make. And that's almost more impressive than the jaw-dropping plays that he makes that we all saw go viral when he was with the Rockies. It's the little everyday plays that he makes that you go, oh, yeah, they're right. Nobody else would have made that. I mean, it reminds you of Roland. It reminds you of when Paul Goldschmidt came and you remembered kind of what it used to be like watching Albert Pujols when he was at his prime defensively too.
That's right.
You forget what those guys do there, and then you realize you were taking it for granted. And he'll do that for a lot of fans this year.
How about how the Cardinals are getting Jack Flaherty ready for this season? It's been, you know, probably a byproduct of seeing these teams so much in the pods because of COVID. So you're seeing teams a lot, but they're using off days. There really are no off days for them, even though it may not show up on the schedule. It shows up as an off day, but they're at work. They're using him on the backfields. It's kind of interesting as I know you're socially distant, way distant from seeing some of this stuff, but it is interesting how they're doing this with Jack Flaherty.
Oh, yeah, I'm creeping with my binoculars out here.
You have to, right?
For some of these Flaherty starts. Derek Gould and I are like, they send out the security. No, I'm kidding. But no, we're out there watching. And just because you got to, I mean, hey, man, he's the opening day starter. You got to have eyes on him if you can, even if it's from a distance. And it's just been interesting. Now, this is not brand new. It's really something they've done more and more since Maddox came on board as the pitching coach and entering the 18 season. We remember Michaelis had such a bad first outing that first spring he was a Cardinal, and then he kind of disappeared, and he was working on the backfields, and nobody knew what to think about that. Well, he got fixed back there. He found his location and got his pitches right, and he had an all-star season, so it can work. We've also seen it with Carlos Martinez when he went out and got shelled by the Mets on opening day, so mixed results. It's a trend going on across baseball, less and less regular spring Grapefruit League appearances for marquee pitchers. They like to tinker more. I think they like the secrecy of a little bit. The Cardinals too also play the Nationals twice within their first 6 weeks, and Jack's schedule would have lined up to have him facing the Nationals every time. It doesn't bother Max Scherzer. He just goes out there and mows the Cardinals down and says, I'll do it when the season counts too, I guess. Doesn't seem to bother him. But a little different situation for Jack. There was one backfield game against the Astros minor leaguers that he requested because he specifically wanted to tinker some pitches. So that was one of his non-traditional starts. His other non-traditional one was a simulated game against his own teammates. That was just a couple days ago. He got hit pretty hard in that one. Paul Goldschmidt homered off of him. Paul DeJong did as well. Then he kind of settled in and really started pitching well. In the second half, he lowered his target and seemed to be much, much sharper there. So, again, it's hard to get a read. There's no reason to wonder that he's not going to pitch well when the season counts, but it's not as simple as simply watching him get better and better every Grapefruit League start against opposing pitchers who are going to be in the majors, because we don't really know what to compare it to. I don't know that, you know, I'm going to sit there and analyze too much how he pitches against Astros minor leaguers, and he's never, ever going to pitch against his teammates, at least not this season. So it's tough to know exactly what Jack's spring has looked like. He says he feels good. He says he's getting ready to be ready to go. But I don't know that we'll know for sure until we see him in Cincinnati.
All right, I want to switch gears. NCAA basketball, Mizzou, Illinois, they're going to get it going. They're going to tip it off, and we got a lot of folks from both sides that listen to us. So let's start with Mizzou. If they win, they beat Oklahoma, they probably get Gonzaga, but let's start with that matchup against Oklahoma, who's missing now their number two scorer out with COVID. I like Mizzou in this matchup. Lon Kruger's club has dropped 5 of 6. Mizzou has kind of limped into the big dance, but still they're in. I like them in this game. What about you?
Yeah, I picked them to win it. I don't feel good about picking Mizzou to win because they just haven't played very well down the stretch. However, neither has Oklahoma, Dan. You mentioned the struggles Oklahoma had. All those games were close losses, and much better conference. Big 12 was better this year than the SEC. They're missing a key player for them, and that's going to hurt them. I think Travis Ford is wondering how a team that has a player who tested positive can play in the NCAA tournament when the Billikens had to shut down for, you know, like it felt like 6 months when they had a positive. So he's still trying to figure that one out. But Mizzou should win this game, and they should fire up and find a way to have a David versus Goliath showdown against Gonzaga. You get to that point, you're playing with house money. I'm curious what Jeremiah Tillman will look like, Dan. We haven't seen him right on the court really since he had his the passing of his second grandmother. I think he's been affected by that. I'm curious to see how big of an impact he can make, because there just aren't very many big men like Tillman in this tournament. You know, Luca Garza is a great big man for Iowa. They can be big assets in tournament play. And if he fires up, then this team can do something, man. These guys beat 9 NCAA tournament teams. They had some head-scratching losses and some bad leads blow up in their face. And I know there's not a lot of enthusiasm about the group right now, but 9 tournament wins on their resume. We're talking about a program that has not won an NCAA tournament game since 2010. It would be a big achievement for a group that was picked to finish 10th in the conference to go out and get a win. I don't know how any team is going to respond after sitting around a hotel room for a week. That's going to be very interesting, and I think it's going to come down to coaching, motivation, and also leadership within the team. Guys who really want to be there, it's going to show. And I think that's really why I am so high, and a lot of people are so high on this team we're going to talk about next. Illinois is a popular pick to win the national championship. I've got them going, I think, to the Final Four. And I've said all year that I think they're the team to beat in the tournament out of our region, because they got the tournament snatched from them last year. Ayo Dosunmu, these guys, Kofi Coburn, they were so eager to play in the NCAA tournament last year. They peaked at the right time, just like they did this year, even better this year, and they had it snatched from them. You know, they didn't get the chance. So they are incredibly motivated to feel like they can make up for lost time. And they played well enough to get the 1 seed. They've got one of the best finishers in the country in Iowa. I think they are going to be a very, very tough team to beat in that orange side of the bracket.
I'm with you. I they're so talented. They're so good. I got them going to the Final Four. I don't have them winning the entire thing. I don't have Gonzaga winning the entire thing. I love Baylor. I love their athleticism. I love the fact that they played a pretty tough schedule and a pretty tough conference. I understand they have deficiencies too, but I'm going to go back to your main point. I think it's going to be, and I've been mentioning this to a lot of people, we saw it with the NHL in the bubble, we saw it in the NBA with the bubble, is that the best teams, because you're basically on a neutral floor, which you would be at the NCAA tournament anyway, for the most part, depending on where you're situated in your region and where you're coming from. But how this is set up is anybody's guess in terms of how teams react. And that, to me, is the great unknown with all this. Is it an equalizer, or does it separate the really good teams to make them great from the so-so? You know what I mean? So your teams that play these really tough conference games, and we know they're really good, and there's other teams that we think are good, do they just get blown out? Because, no, these are the really good teams. And this is the separator. And I wonder if that happens in this tournament.
I think it's a great point. My buddy Brendan Weesey made a great point the other night. We were doing the radio, and he said in his bracket, he's giving a lot of leeway to teams that have a certain style, an up-tempo energy and style. A team like Arkansas, I think you got to watch out for.
Yep.
A team like West Virginia, I think you got to watch out for.
Two teams. Why? I did too. Yeah.
Because they bring their own energy, and this tournament is all going to be about whatever energy you can create in a place with hardly any fans, when all you're doing is staying in a hotel. The teams that create their own energy, I think, are going to be the scary teams. I also think that teams that have played battle-tested games are going to be better. That's why I don't like Gonzaga.
Me neither.
I don't like Gonzaga to win it. I've got actually Iowa. I've got Iowa against Baylor in the national championship, and I got Baylor winning it all.
That's Iowa, who I have too, yeah.
Iowa, you know, they're not getting the love that Illinois is getting, but they've played Illinois tough in the Big Ten championship. They've got Luca Garza, one of the best big men in the nation, and he is, you know, he's going to be the leader of that group. I think Fran McCaffrey's a crazy man, but he's got good players, and they've been through the ringer. So I think those are the teams that I'd like to really, you know, keep their head above water in this thing. It's going to be a great tournament, man. I'm so excited that there are some non-traditional teams in it. I think Alabama is going to go really deep. I like Alabama quite a bit. I might actually have Alabama in the championship, Dan. I got to relook at my bracket. I got the 10-minute rule. I got the 10-minute rule where I don't look at my bracket longer than 10 minutes while I fill it out, because it can just become all-consuming. But I took Alabama really deep. I took Arkansas really deep. I think Nate Oates is a hell of a coach, and I think Alabama is going to do whatever it has to do to keep him. The other topic here, too, and we won't go too long, there's going to be a very interesting coaching carousel spin after this one. We're seeing, you know, Indiana in play. We could see some interesting job shifts trickle down from that. So there's always the chance for coaches to make a name for themselves. You know, watch out for Porter Moser as well. He gets a chance there. If Illinois is going to go down, it could very well go down to Loyola. Loyola got ridiculously underseeded, and it's kind of, they're mad about it, and Illinois is not going to be happy about it either, because they'd have to meet them sooner rather than later in this thing. So some very compelling storylines for some coaches, like the coach out of Drake as well. He's going to be a popular name if they make a run on this thing.
Yeah, Darren DeVries at Drake, Porter, yep, Moser at Loyola Chicago, and he's got them, obviously took him to a Final Four. Now he's got them potentially in the second round against Illinois, and it's even – you know, with all eyes at one site, or at least centralized, it's a very valid point, too, that you make, because a lot of times the business of coaching and getting jobs is done in the lobby of the hotels. That's where stuff goes. That's where it happens. And,
yeah,
you know, if these guys can put up good games and all of a sudden maybe win or have some kind of showing, or it catches the AD's eye on how they play or whatever – that makes a difference, man, and that's, I think it's a valid point. It's something to think about.
Yeah, should be a very compelling tournament for a lot of reasons, although I don't think the bar hanging out, talking up coaching and coaches and ADs for jobs is going to be happening. That might have to be like an unrecorded Zoom.
You betcha.
Maybe after some game. I'm sure that would never leak out or get tweeted about or anything like that.
Never happens. Never, ever, ever. Not in this day and age, buddy. No way.
We both got Baylor winning it all. We're so boring.
I know, but they're really good. They're really good. They're really athletic. And it'll probably be Gonzaga or somebody.
Good athletes and good defense. But I don't think it will be Gonzaga. I really don't. If it's Gonzaga, then I will be surprised. They had not played a close game you got to go back to like December, I think, when they played Iowa, actually. They've beaten some good teams. It's not like they haven't played anybody, but they haven't been tested. And the tournament, it finds ways to test teams, and they haven't had one in a while.
Yeah, it's interesting. Can't wait to get it going. Gets going today. And, Ben, love doing these on Fridays, and we will make sure and catch you up next week.
Sounds good, brother. Talk soon.
That's Ben Fredrickson of the Post-Dispatch, and we're brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group. And all you have to do is visit Blue Tail Medical Group. .com